Episode 21 of Consistently Above Average is here. Recorded Thursday evening, technically Friday morning, before the worst of Storm Owen? Is it a different way of saying Owen? I'm not sure. You might be listening to this episode fresh off the press, Friday the 24th of January, early morning, day off work, inside by the fire. You look to your right, look to your left, look straight forward. You'll see your neighbor's trampoline heading across the skyline, heading for someone else's back garden. As much as I am joking about that, because we're going to see a lot of trampoline content on the internet tomorrow, it is inevitable. There is a potential for this to be very serious. A couple of months ago, in the middle of the night, fairly terrible storm for Dundalk standards, me and my mate were driving around country roads, 2:30 in the morning, taking down election posters. Now, beside the fact that it was insanely stupid to be at that, massive winds and rain, we were double parking on blind spots on country roads, getting them down. We finally called the search off at around 3 o'clock in the morning, and it was because we almost went into a tree that had come down across the road. The next three roads that we tried to take to get back into Dundalk all had trees down in front of us as well. We had to go such a long way through floods, through everything, just to get back. Now, as time of recording, there's already reports of stuff like trees down in Kerry, and the worst of it is not meant to be until 6 o'clock in the morning. Now, you may live in a place that's not going to get it bad. Exact same with the snow a couple of weeks ago. A lot of stuff wasn't shut down because of the snow, but places in the country were like inaccessible for a couple of days, and communities really banded together to be able to sort people out in situations like that. So, despite the fact opening with a joke, chatting a little bit humorously, it doesn't mean that there aren't going to be people who are going to be screwed badly for a couple of days or longer. Not relating this to anyone, not giving away the identity. In the last sort of storms and stuff like that, I know of a person who's on palliative care, like end of life sort of treatment, and was in their house with no heating for a couple of days. So, as funny as you think it's going to be to hold the phone up and let everyone know exactly what you think, or putting out a tweet or putting something up on Facebook, like, there are people that are going to get it bad over the next couple of days. If you're able to get out and train today, maybe you live a few minutes away from your gym, maybe a few people are going to get together and train because it's the day off and it's safe to do so, perfect. Fair play to you. Well done. Glad you got the session in. But there is a reason why transport services are not running, why flights are cancelled, why places aren't opening, why major delivery chains are like, yeah, we're not delivering stuff tomorrow, don't open. They're not saying this terrible thing is definitely going to happen, but there is a higher chance than normal of something bad happening, and that has to be taken seriously. Me and my dad last night having a great little time looking at flight radar, seeing the absolute lack of flights, transatlantic flights that are rerouting around and above Ireland that would normally be coming over Ireland at these times. looking at the weather helicopters and the weather planes and stuff like that, the people that are going out in the middle of this thing to try and gauge metric data and stuff like that, it is insane. And I just don't know. I feel like I had to start this week's podcast with that, because I think now that the way that the internet has gone and the way that people are like so emboldened in their views and so against other people's views, like US elections, great example like that. Some people think it's Christmas. Some people think it's the end of the world. And neither side are willing to think that the other side might have a fair point about something. It's just like, yeah, we won. Or, no, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to humanity. And there's no middle ground anymore. So, unfortunately, myself included in many ideas as well, I'm completely biased on loads of things. We all think that we have it sussed. We have everything sussed. That they are keeping something from us. And that we aren't going to fall for it. Fall for the lamestream media. It's only a bit of wind. It's only a bit of rain. Yap, 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 yap. Like, literally, wind your neck in, and realize could very well be a family going to sleep tomorrow night, one member short because of a wrong place, wrong time, location, tragic accident. But here, fair play to you. At least you had your funny tweet up or funny Facebook post up about how the snowflakes are taking precaution over the weather or something like that. Just wobble. Give that head a wobble. Now, in a complete U-turn, all right, I made a very intelligent, Chad, handsome decision before I even knew that there was a storm coming to fly home from Lisbon yesterday morning. What luck have I got? Best of luck to all of my friends still out there trying to get home this weekend. There are worse places to be stuck in the world than Lisbon, to be fair, but after a couple of days there and maybe having to try and sort accommodation or spending a lot of time in airports, my wishes are that you have good meme content to look at on your phone and get a nice spot close to a charger if you're going to be in an airport for a couple of hours over the weekend. Smooth sailing for the most part for me today home, though, I have to say. A lovely little flight, 2 free seats to myself, got to sleep across the 3 seats. First class in economy is what we like to call that. Very cheap Uber to the airport. A little bit of stress tidying up the Airbnb so they don't report you for not taking the bins out, despite a cleaning fee already being applied to the property. And I would have loved, I will admit, I would have loved just one more cobblestone, cheap as chips espresso from Lisbon, but I can wait for that until next year. The Europeans were an absolutely phenomenal event, and the best of it is still to come. I'm going to be glued to Flow Grappling for most of the weekend, watching the black belt adult divisions, and I can't wait. As you would expect, featherweight, probably the best division of the weekend. Lightweight, not too far behind it either. Tynan Dalper, is he there? Is he going to compete? He's back in the mix at the Europeans as well. Unbelievable. Odevelis, Multiusos, Pavalio Multiusos de Odevelis. Wonderful venue. Walk from the train station a little bit longer than I remembered, I have to say. But you can offset that by the fact Ubers are very cheap. €3 Uber from the station to the venue if you wanted. Jump in the shuttle bus if you want. From chatting to people from where their accommodation was, their Ubers were never more than like 9 to 15 euro depending on the time of the day anyway. So great spot, lovely spot, I have to say. I'll talk more about it in the future, especially the food that I had over there. But from seeing all the videos online, IBJJF doing great sort of content in terms of talking to coaches who are all talking about accommodation, transport, cost-wise, Lisbon is the place for the Europeans. It is miles and miles ahead of Paris. The aesthetic of the Paris venue, in my opinion, very nice. Coolest venue I've ever competed in. Don't get me wrong on that. But Lisbon is just head and shoulders above on so many different levels. There's a heightened atmosphere of competing in a venue like that, where everyone is competing on a ground floor level and the seats are a little bit higher. Slope seats going down. The crowd are above you. It feels like they're on top of you. The noise and the support from bigger teams that they can create in very tense crunch matches just by whacking the barriers, singing Brazilian songs, Portuguese songs. Unbelievable. A fella whose matches I really enjoyed the other day, there were loads, but I will just shout out Jose Steve. His run in the brown belt division, very, very impressive. This man is calm. He is cool. He is collected, if you can excuse the cliche there. He has some excellent tactics, knowledge of this point scoring system for the IBJJF, high level at jiu-jitsu himself, comes from a relatively small team in Belgium, made big waves at purple belt as well, trains, as I said, small team, has linked up with Dreamart and Isaac Baenz. Never great with the Portuguese last names. Isaacy is just however I would have always. Baenz. Look, it's all right. It's grand. That's definitely helped him over the last while. But it's the academy that he trains at is called Saint Academy. C-E-N-S. Maybe I've said that wrong too. Sens Academy. They've produced quite a number of medals at Europeans over the last few years, especially at white belt. For a single academy in a place like Belgium, that is an absolutely insane achievement. So if you do have a Flow Grappling account or you just want to go looking them up on Instagram, look up Jose Steve. Great matches, great shithousery, great interacting with the crowd. Just like the Alex Pereira level aura in terms of his confidence. Just great stuff. Now, the other day at the venue, let's talk about it. Hopefully February's longer form podcast video guest. Me and this person were discussing this at length, so I'm not going to go into it too much today. It might be a little bit of pragmatism, realism, lack of confidence, or a mix of all of the three. Maybe it comes with a little bit of age and life experience. Regarding the European Championships, I knew getting onto that plane that I had more chance of winning the Euro Millions than I did of winning my division this week. Was that going to stop me from competing? Absolutely not. Was that mindset going into the tournament going to hinder me or a bad thing? In my opinion, it wasn't a bad thing. No. Now, let's preface this. I have a feeling that within myself and my aspirations for what I could do, I know how difficult that it was going to be. The draw that I was given, certainly not a good one, in terms of even just getting wins on the board. Mentally, with what my future ambitions are, could I have, in good faith, sat at home, lied to myself about how, oh, next time it'd be better. No, I'm just not going to do it this year. I'm just gonna hold off. Not ready. Not going to win. I'm only going to go if I'm going to win. I'm not good enough. Blah, 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 blah. Right? Absolutely not. I think that you have to accumulate this experience. No matter what, you have to accumulate it. You show up. You do the thing you do every day in the gym that you love doing more than anything, which is rolling, which is sparring, which is competing against other people. And you try to implement your best possible version of that and test yourself against someone who's trying to do the exact same thing under entirely different and hostile circumstances compared to how you would normally train. Now, there are realities in all of this. My opponent was better than me. He was certainly better at certain aspects than I am. Low athletic, explosive passing that focused on pant grips, big movements side to side, really, really good reactions off my transitions. I made what I think was one huge error that I felt it happen as soon as I did it, and it was from something as simple or something as innocuous as changing my open guard position, my leg position from one side to the other, which led on to his better passing side. And he seen that opening straight away and he acted on it. Bang. Not addressing a key grip that he took early on that I ignored in my collar. Moving my head way too close to him to allow him to control my head. All of those things, silly mistakes that in the moment of adrenaline, crowd, tournament, people watching, pressure, all of these things, blanked. Pure blanked. What a lesson. What a lesson to be able to learn that. To remind yourself on that, to double down on that, to realize here, this was stupid. This cannot happen again. His ability to finish from the back, not as good as I would have thought. He got my back. Maybe my defense and escapes were better than what I thought they were. My ability to recover from passing positions, much better than before. Staying in the match without getting a noticeable bit of an offense. I did have a bite on an arm from one certain position that I'm not going to think was too much going for me at all. He did react. He did pull it out. Listen, low percentage thing, but something that I had hit quite a lot leading up to the tournament. Would rather not have been in the position to try attempt it though. And in particular, one position from the guard that I've been working on a little bit, I got to that two or three times. And I did nothing with it because he was able to shut it down and I need to get better at it. That's the main thing. Maybe the game plan in particular was not the move for this match and division and tournament. But as I said, that's all right. It's all good. Losing in a competitive sport is definitely annoying. But for me, it's a little bit different because it wasn't until my mid to late 20s before I started to be truly affected or down on myself with results that I would have in competition. I attribute this largely that I had the safety net of excuses of being a stoner, not taking things seriously, having other things going on in my life that I cared a little bit more about than competing. So it was when those things went away and I only focused on competing that I did put a little bit more effort in, that I did care a little bit more about the results. And maybe in the last little while, like I've had good days, I've had bad days, I'm going to be statistically one of those people. If you're making your metric by good or bad day on gold medal or bust, I'm going to have more bad days, more bust days than I'm going to have good days for the probably the remainder of my jiu-jitsu competitive career. That does not bother me. I hope I'm wrong, but it's not going to deter me from trying or attempting to win matches or to medal at these major tournaments in the future. Now, that's me and that's me alone. And there's other people who'll roll their eyes listening to this, and that's completely fine. You have to have your thing as well. You have to have the thing that drives you as well. You have to make those logical thoughts to yourself as well, or what seems logical to you as well. The thing that kind of stuck out to me was that there were a lot of people that I would have expected to see competing at these tournaments who weren't or who didn't for whatever reasons. And like I said about me with my logic, I'm sure there are legitimate reasons for themselves for not competing. But back to my perspective, not preparing with intensity, not preparing with intention, not to like keep showing up and to keep getting the work in to get ready to go and do in that tournament, and also not attempting something as big as this, is a non-starter. It's a non-negotiable. I'm not going to do major tournaments like that in the future if I'm not training. I'm not going to be like, I'll just jump in for the crack. But I was training and I was preparing and I did want to try and go and do my best. And that's really the biggest takeaway that I got from it. Okay, I did what I wanted to get from it and I got a little bit more experience competing at a high level, and I'm definitely better off for it than if I had sat at home. Okay, those who attend, who've been there, who understand, will know what I mean about there being a certain type of buzz at these tournaments. The fear and anticipation getting out of that taxi or waiting for the taxi, walking into the venue for the first time. A load of Brazilians walking around looking for Wi-Fi, wearing hilariously oversized coats because of the weather. Yet they're walking around with gold medals. You know, they just won. Groups of teams going to tournaments like this for the first time. Coaches over to support and train with students. Maybe meet people that they've known over the years, competed against over the years. A good atmosphere of everybody around. An element of, you know, like so many people who understand what it's like or what it means to put yourself out there at such a high level. Like all of these things matter. And it's an absolute privilege to be a part of it, to be around that atmosphere, to be in that venue, to be in the mix of it. I would recommend checking out a guy on Instagram called Max Lindeblad for very thoughtful and insightful posts about the week of the Europeans. His stories have been great as well. Much more eloquently worded posts about the Europeans that I could ever do justice with, which is hilarious because I don't think English is his first language, even though he is fluent in English as well, but I believe he's Swedish. So he can talk about it better than I can. So that's the end of the European discussion. This is the discussion that I think is going to be good, right? The other night at dinner with a couple of friends, a couple of associates, friends we'll call them, it was brought up that a couple of questions would be good on this week's podcast. Oh, you need to get back to getting questions in. It's good when you get questions in and when you're talking about it and people give you kind of a thing to run with and then you can chat about that. And we did get a couple of them in. The question box went up. We did get some in and some that I think could have made a good episode of. However, a question was then brought up at the table a few minutes later, and I thought, do you know what? This might boil enough piss around the country to get people insanely outraged over nothing at all and make loads of people listening to the podcast, and then it'll go viral, and then everyone will be listening, and then everyone will put me on their shoulders and start going, Andrew, Andrew, Andrew. And while that is not actually the goal of this statement, this is not actually what I'm going to try and do. It is funny to play a devil's advocate, and it is worth considering it. It is worth considering it. A little thrown out question, a throwaway question. Oh, well, what about this? Let me paint it for you here. Has Irish jiu-jitsu regressed? Let's do that one more time. Has Irish jiu-jitsu regressed? Gone backwards? Gotten worse? It's awful. Everything's going down the drain. Let me preface anything that I'm about to say here by saying that last year I was one of the people, myself and Gianluca, trying to and organizing, by our own admission, our own ego-fueled admission, fairly successful, fairly big turnout cross-training sessions where a lot of high-level people came together to train to prepare for tournaments. And we got great training in, good connections made, good friendships forged, good curry ate. My waddy drank, Coke Zero served on ice. What more could you want? It was good training. It was good training, okay? So I am not falling on one side of this argument or the other. I'm just putting it out there as a question. Has Irish Jiu-Jitsu regressed? And I'm taking a devil's advocate position for it, where I'm going to tell you where you could think that maybe it has regressed, even though I fully believe that the level in the country right now is higher than it has ever been, because that's just the way it is. The sport has evolved and it's higher than it's ever been. And at the same time, it's also maybe at the lowest point that it's going to be in the next couple of years as well, because it's only going to get better from here on out. Okay. From those training events, we got good feedback. My impression, as I said, level is quite high in the country. But the question was asked, and in the context of looking at the broader scale of results from this year's Europeans from Irish athletes, has Irish Jiu-Jitsu regressed? Now, I will be abused again for saying this name wrong. Layden O'Driscoll, stat expert extraordinaire, spreadsheet extraordinaire, has always compiled big lists of medalists over the years of European Championships, World Championships, posted them on Facebook. I'm not in that group anymore. I don't know if it was done this year. I know she has done them more recently, and I know it is a lot of effort. So maybe there is a big list, and I've missed loads of people. And even though I'm not in that category, and because I do not have the time to go through it all in the way that I would have liked, well, I did. I'm just not going to stay up all night doing it. We are primarily going to discuss adult divisions only for a moment. The adult division only is what we're talking about and referencing. So, if you are a person that appreciates a good stat, here are some stats for you that I have taken the initiative to look up for you, okay? The Irish Open in 2024. The adult competitors of the Irish Open, male and female, in 2024. Zero white belts who medaled at the Irish Open competed at the Europeans. That is zero adult white belt Irish Open medalists, not including absolutes, because I already checked their names, so they would have medaled anyway. 1 through 4 or 1 through 3 did not compete at the Europeans. Okay? Now, could be very understandable. They've gotten promoted to blue belt since. Maybe they got promoted and competed as a blue belt. I will admit, I did not cross-reference the white belt list from the Irish Open with the blue belt athlete competitor list for the IBJJF Europeans. There may have been one or two that slipped through the net. But in my perspective, you did the Irish Open. Irish Open was September, I think. Was it September? Had they already moved it back? No, it was June. Okay, a little bit more leeway here. Generally speaking, you could hold that person off until January and give them a chance of winning the Europeans. They may have won the Irish Open with a year and a half's training. You don't need to move them to blue belt straight away because of that. There are cases to be made for holding someone off. Let them try win the Europeans. But at blue belt Irish Open 2024, Stuart Carmody won gold at the Irish Open. He competed as a purple belt at the Europeans. And a quick shout to Stuart, who dropped a very, very narrow loss to the champion, a student of Marcio Andres, this guy from Angola. It was an insane match with Stuart. His match in the final was very technical as well against Varun Mehotra. I think Short Thick Boy is his name on Instagram. student of Murillo in Unity and Levi Jones Leary. Great game, great style. Bit of a meme lord, funny guy online. they had a great final. I would have loved to have seen Stewart against him as well in the final. But the match with Marcio Andres guy was so lost, so narrow for Stewart's first tournament as a purple belt. That guy is destined, if he keeps on that trajectory, to be a black belt world's medalist. If he keeps on this trajectory. So Stewart won the Irish Open. He did the Europeans as a purple belt. His brother Shane medaled at the Irish Open, both from the same gym, Studio Galera. They did the Europeans as purple belt. The only other two blue belt medalists, Charlie Caldwell from Portugal Gold Team, Oren O'Kane from Team Torres. 4 out of 20, two of which were promoted to and competed at purple. So two blue belts out of 20, two blue belts out of 18, we'll say then, that medaled at the Irish Open went on to compete at the Europeans. Okay? And I can confirm that the other medalists, adult blue belt medalists, did not compete at purple belt. Only the two Carmody's. Now, at purple belt, Liam Clark from East Coast, Ethan Kendrick from East Coast, and James Baker from Newground all medaled at the Irish Open adult at purple belt, and those three competed at the Europeans. Liam and Ethan at purple, James at brown. 3 out of 15 medalists. Lee McBride also won 82 kilos. He was registered to compete, ended up not being able to travel due to a work thing that had come up short notice, was due to compete as a brown belt. At brown belt, we had Connor Toland from Talos. He won a medal at Irish Open at adult level. Him and Padraig O'Connell both did, but competed at Masters at Europeans. Understandable, moving down to get the match in Ireland, go for Masters at the Major. That's 2 out of 8 medalists. Two brown belt. The fact that there's only 8 medalists is another discussion in itself. 2 out of 8, that's all. At female, Rosario Silva, adult in Ireland, master at Europeans, 1 out of 7 white belt female adult medalists from the Irish Open that competed at the Europeans. Blue belt, there was only 3 medalists at the Irish Open. There was only 1 adult female blue belt division. None of those people competed at the Europeans. Purple belt adult, there was 8 medalists. 1 did Europeans, that's Alexander Boyle. And there was no brown or black belt adult female divisions. That is 11 medalists out of a total of 91 adult medals awarded at the Irish Open did the Europeans. Percentage wise, I think, what's that? 11 into 91? Is that 9%? Is it 10%? 11%? I don't know. Should have done those quick maths before I started recording this podcast. However, devil's advocate time. I know plenty of people who didn't medal at the Irish Open or compete for whatever reason, couldn't do it, weren't able to do it, no one registered, whatever, but they did the Europeans. And this is no slight on their result or who did or who didn't go to the Europeans. This is just linked to the question that I posted you a few minutes ago. Has Irish Jiu-Jitsu regressed? Now, last time, for the people in the back who just want to be outraged, it doesn't matter if it was, well, it'd be, my point would be invalid if 91 out of 91 went and did the Europeans. But I feel that 11 medalists from our national championship at an adult level then not doing the Europeans is a bit strange, because I'm pretty sure that if you went through the Irish Open numbers over the years, it would have been higher in terms of who went and did the Europeans. Okay, that's my main reason for looking up that figure, and I just took a notion. I was like, well, I wonder how many did it, do you know? Now let's look at it from both perspectives. What was their incentive to even go and do the Europeans? We may have discussed this on the show before. There's an excellent model in Finland, the Finnish Open. They have a much better, well, they have an organized National Jiu-Jitsu Association anyway. It is, if not the best European National Jiu-Jitsu Association. It offers an insane amount of travel expenses and registration to division winners for the next available majors, like the Worlds, Gi and No-Gi, like the Europeans, Gi and No-Gi, all of these things. So let's take the cost out of this for a second, because the cost is such a huge effect. Taking time off work, middle of the week for some people, heading away to Lisbon, accommodation, registration fee, money for over there. The Portugal is affordable, but it does add up. My question is, do these people think that it's not worth their while doing the Europeans? Are they defined in the gold medal or nothing mindset? No point doing the Europeans if I'm not going to win it. Is that the issue why so many Irish Open medalists did not do the Europeans? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Is it the wrong opinion to have? I think it's like, I think this is linked to the question of has Irish Jiu-Jitsu regressed? Then I would say, yes, it is the wrong opinion to have. It is. You think there's no point in doing the Europeans because you're not going to win it. No, you're wrong. You think you're only defined in terms of your improvement, your experience, your results, your what you're going to get from it by a gold medal or nothing. No, you're wrong. Like, I am, excuse the expression, I am spitballing here because I do think and I hope that this has the ability to turn into a much more nuanced discussion with other coaches over the next little while. I'm not saying, oh, your fella's after winning the Irish Open and he didn't bother showing up to the Euros. Not in the slightest. I just want to know why. I think it's an interesting question to ask, psychology-wise. Here are some broad theories that I have in regards to why Irish Jiu-Jitsu may have regressed a little bit. And by the way, again, can't stress it enough, devil's advocate. I think the level is really high in the country at the minute. I think the level is good. I think we've got really good up-and-coming grapplers. That is, I can't stress that enough. Stuart Carmody, world champion, adult level, gi and no gi. That is proof enough that there is great jiu-jitsu on this island. First adult male world champion in Brazilian jiu-jitsu at any belt level. There is world-level jiu-jitsu on this island. And I think one of the things that could be a reason or could be a factor is that there is a current generational lag between competitors. Masters turnout seems high from Ireland, and it will be high for Barcelona, I'm absolutely certain, later on in the year. But when I say generational lag, I simply mean that a lot of the older or more established competitors who would have done these tournaments over the years are now gym owners. They are dads. They are mums. They have bigger jobs. They have jobs outside of jiu-jitsu. They have jobs running their jiu-jitsu gyms. They are out of that competition phase of their life. All of these things, completely understandable. And it's just a natural, a generational lag of getting the next group of people up to that level or up to that love or commitment or intention of wanting to do something like the Europeans. Now, another spanner in the works here. Is there a technical lag in ability? Are we just not as good? Are we not good enough? That could also be linked maybe to somebody, again, running the business. So 100% of the focus is gone from their time training and developing, maybe traveling to compete, traveling to train in other places. And now they have to worry about keeping a place open for hundreds of people, for 20 people, 50 people, 70 people, 100 people, 150 people, whatever, to keep a place open so that more people can enjoy jiu-jitsu, develop jiu-jitsu, get into jiu-jitsu. I'm 100% behind that too. That could happen. Less time to study, less time to work on stuff, less time for drilling because you're teaching classes, all of this sort of stuff. 100% that can happen. I also think that affiliation-wise, there might be less of a direct influence or like offshoots from the highest end of gyms and affiliations. There is going to be outliers, and this is the kind of point that I'm just trying to make. Let's use Checkmate, for example. Huge affiliation, okay? Adam Marzinski represents Checkmate. His first adult black belt medal world title. Black belt world title came last year off the back of years and years and years of trips to Checkmate HQ in America to prepare for Worlds. And he had an extended stint there last year in the run-up to it, which I'm sure helped him a lot. And that was Adam's first world title after 10 years of doing black belt Worlds. So, yeah, okay, there are Checkmate in Ireland. There are Alliance. There are Gracie Barra. There are BJJ Revolution. There are links to a lot of big teams and gyms and stuff like that, and world-class people come over and do seminars and stuff. But what I'm saying is, with the exception of Stuart Carmody, heading off to live in Claudio Calasan's gym and Shane, or to head off to Athos to be helped out by their world champions and Andre Galvao. I'm not aware of any talented, devoted, 100% committed athlete who is affiliated to X, Y, or Z, who are then being sent off to X, Y, or Z's main place to train, to prepare for Worlds, to go over, to do these things, okay? That's what I'm trying to mention or bring up when I'm talking about affiliative link, okay? Another thing that I think is a huge element is a lack of affordable competitions. Now, I have been told countless times in the last year that people are annoyed at costs, right? Grappling Industries, it's expensive. You get more matches, better value, whatever. What if it's a person that only has one in their division, two in their division? They're paying whatever for the two matches. Great for the 76 kilo white belt. Great for the 76 kilo blue belt, 100%. You're getting 8+ matches all day, every day. Not so great for some of the other categories. The round robin format is great, assuming there's a lot of people in your division. Now, 100%, by the way, from both sides, organizers deserve to make as much money as they think they should from tournaments. They're expensive to run. Medics, at least now they've started getting medics with that particular tournament I just mentioned. Insurance for venues, renting the venues, renting the mats. The high cost of cleaning the mats overnights in between day one and day two, of course. Like, there is costs associated with running tournaments. The tournaments are not subsidized by any government interests or anything like that. So they set the price and they can run for profit, which is what capitalism is. And it's brilliant. They can do that. I'm 100% behind it. But it doesn't take away from the fact that if someone is not able to compete 12 times a year at a very affordable cost, then they are maybe not going to feel like they have the experience to go and compete at one of these major tournaments. They are not going to develop the savviness that may be required for winning close matches. Tactical decisions, technical decisions, when to not go for certain things, when to risk it, when to hold back. You build this experience by competing, or by having an insanely, insanely knowledgeable coach who is able to explain those rules and nuances and translate it in a gym environment that can somehow stick with you the same way it happening to you in a tournament would, okay? Which is very, very hard, all right? Now, what I've been told from one or two gyms in England, chatting to friends from over there, is that a lot of the students are happy to do these like sub-only type shows, invitational shows that are looking for matches to sell tickets. That's all good as well. But they don't have to pay to get on them shows. They get free matches. And they get a poster for Instagram and they get it recorded and they get content and they get whatever. So they are much happier to get matches, compete for free every couple of weeks or months, and not have to pay registration fees to do tournaments. And all of these tournaments are going to be within max a 4 to 6 hour drive for them to be able to do it. And it's free. So very understandable on those things as well. Okay. Now, I've also been told, say in Brazil, people growing up, they could be competing every second weekend and it becomes normalized. The tournaments are cheaper, cheaper entry. This is based off economics. It's based off numbers, the size of the sport over there, all of those things. What I'm trying to say is that affordable competitions that can create more experience, normalize nerves, building confidence, are going to make more people more likely to compete at something like the Europeans. Okay? That was the crux of my argument there, if nothing else. Other countries could have also had a bigger emphasis on kids and teens events or kids and teens tournaments 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, whatever years ago. And now these are all good high-level adult competitors, male and female from other countries, who are capable of performing at this level. You will notice in the blue, purple, brown divisions, in my opinion, IBJJF Europeans, a lot of these medalists are without a doubt under the age of 25. I think it's incredibly unlikely that they started jiu-jitsu at the age of 17 or 18 like I did. So they've been at it since they were younger. This links back to that generational lag type thing that we were talking about before. in the sense we have the Carmody's, we have someone like Zara from East Coast who are all young, came through kids and teens programs here. It's a lag thing, okay? That may ride itself out. I have a feeling that it will, in terms of the young competitors that we potentially have and the amount of kids that are training and competing in Ireland at the moment. But for the time being, the lag is there, and it's not a negative reflection on Ireland. It's just, it's there, okay? Now, one more spanner in the works here. Is the technical level of the athletes not there? Like, someone wins the Irish Open, but technically they have no chance at winning matches at Europeans. Is the technical level not there due to coaches? Is it not there due to coaching styles, timetables, curriculums in gyms, 1 hour class, maybe not enough for someone who's trying to go to the Europeans? Is it our too comfortable of lifestyles? No struggle to get to training, sacrifices required. Of course, people are going to have struggles, sacrifices. I mean that we're not favelas, we're not different parts of the world where the opportunity to train and to exercise can also lead to an opportunity to change your life. Are all of these young people or 32-year-old podcasters, are we all overstimulated, oversaturated from the amount of content on the internet that we're just consuming all day, every day, maybe even an Instagram reel like this? Are they worrying that someone from AOJ is in their division and they don't want to get highlight reeled? Now, these aren't based off anything. These are just potential aspects that could be considered. This didn't come up the other night. The person who brought this up the other day probably is deeply upset that they have caused me to go on this sort of a rant and ramble and sound like I'm having a manic episode while thinking about it. But I just thought that's a great question. Has it regressed? These are just aspects that could be considered. And as I said, I'm the Irish Jiu-Jitsu stan here. I'm on board. I think it's going great. I think it's going well. I think there's a lag and I hope it will right itself. But I want to hear more from people. And I'm not going to take the piss out of my coach Seb because he will absolutely batter me. But he did tell me before about not worrying about the other person that you're going to compete against or what you see online. Go and compete. Go and feel what their energy is and then react and think from there. Just know what you're going to do, what your game is, and then don't worry about anything else. If we translate that, it means that before social media and the internet was so prominent, you had no idea. You just believed in yourself, you trained hard, you prepared, you went there, and it wasn't until you felt their grips or knew from their intention of their first couple of moves or sequences how good somebody could be. And Seb would make a joke saying, at that point, it's already too late, you're in there, so you have to just fight like fuck and go as hard as you can and then see what happens from that point on. Now, the opposite of that is, not only can people be beaten before they step on the mat, but they can be beaten because of where someone is from. And in fact, they can actually be beaten before it even happens because they don't put their name down to compete because someone is there already. And that has been said to me so many times. Smooth Comp, big fans of the owners, have met them. But my God, nothing strikes fear into the heart of a nervous competitor more than clicking onto a Smooth Comp profile and seeing some lad at white belt has 28 wins and no losses. They're thinking, well, why am I signing up for that? Why am I paying money to be number 29, to be number 30, to be 31, to be 32? I adore Smooth Comp, but those records kill a lot of people. Mentally, they kill a lot of people. And that is a fact because it's been said to me so many times from my own training partners and from other people. That is a huge, huge issue. And I don't know the answers. I can't stress that enough. I don't know the answers, but I absolutely love the question. And it sent me down an absolutely insane rabbit hole this evening on the night of Storm Owen. As I sit here after midnight waiting to see a trampoline go past my window. So what I would like to do from this podcast is this, the longest episode in history of just me talking uninterruptedly. And if you've lasted till the end, my God, you're better than me. But what I would like to do is this, over the next couple of episodes, let me fix the technological aspect of this podcast. let me think about getting on a couple of coaches, maybe one or two per week, on the phone for 10 minutes and see would they be interested or open to answering 3 to 5 questions. What's their opinion? Has Irish Jiu-Jitsu regressed? Where do they think it's weak? Where can it get better? What could be the solution to fixing it? Just something as simple as that. We're not going to slander. We're not going to throw people under the bus. Nobody is in a position to throw anyone under the bus. Nobody should be thrown under the bus. Just from their perspective, what do you think is happening? Where do you think the level's at? What can people do to try to get the level higher? And X, Y, or Z. Okay? Let's see. Let's just see. Throw that out there. If you listen to this and your coach despises me and your coach doesn't listen to this podcast, that's okay. You can ask them what they think. Maybe they'll send me a message. Maybe they'll agree to do it. Maybe I'll send a few messages myself, which I will, to ask a few people if they'll do it over the next couple of weeks. And I don't know what my solution is. We'll finish the show on this. My solution for the next year is to try and derail as many promising GAA and rugby players as possible and convince them that they should try win a white belt European title with 12 months of training. I think that's the blueprint. I think we're all completely missing out. The blueprint is in other sports. Hijack developed athletes from other sports. Teach them how to headlock. Teach them how to double leg. Teach them how to just be pure dogs. And that's gonna be the key to white belt, novice, European medal success. And then really it's only a matter of time before that translates to black belt world championships and the like. So, oh my God, we're finally done. Thank you very much for tuning in. Consistently Above Average, episode 21, available on all podcasting platforms, Spotify, Apple, and wherever else you get your podcasts. Thank you very much for tuning in. Hopefully the storm is good to you. Hopefully all things are good. And we will chat next week. Good luck.